mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, insights on the latest hiring and compensation trends impacting today's workforce from the just-released 2025 Robert Half Salary Guide. Also this morning, making the case for Issue 10, the Hancock County Job and Family Services levy on the November ballot. And the new season of main stage shows at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts is about to begin. There's still time to get your seats for single events or the entire series. Heather Clough will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, October 17th, 2024. Bundle up this morning. It's another chilly day. Officially, it says here on our readout, 33 degrees in Findlay, although one of the guys on staff here is saying that on his way in, the car reading said 28. Ooh, man. So, yeah, very chill. I think it's colder this morning than it was yesterday, and yesterday we had the freeze warning. So, I don't know. Definitely one of those days to bundle up before you head out. And I don't understand people, and we all know someone like this, who's like, I will not wear a coat until at least mid-November. You know? And we know someone like that. Maybe you yourself, somebody. I don't get that. I mean, it's cold, and that's why God gave us coats. It's cold. Put on a coat. I don't care whether it's, December or October or mid-July, if we get one of those chilly, if it's cold, I'm putting on a coat. I don't get those people that are absolutely hell-bent against, putting on a coat. It's like turning on the furnace at home and turning on the heat. It's cold. That's why God gave us heat, the ability to create heat. So use that God-given ability to create heat and warm yourself up. It is chilly this morning. So the two giant pandas arrived at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. yesterday, apparently are acclimating to their new surroundings very well. Let's see here. The one 3-year-old, Bo Lee, whose mom was born at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., and his grandparents lived there for 20 years. When he arrived, he had no problem hopping out of his crate, and he'd been shipped from China, hopped out of his crate and started exploring, chowing down on some bamboo, all of that. His counterpart, Ching Bao, was a little more hesitant, apparently, to exit her crate, but eventually came out, took a dip in the pool, in the enclosure, and then it says here, let out a giant jet-lagged yawn, making the trip from China. If you are planning to, I bring it up because if you're planning a trip to the National Zoo to see the pandas, don't bother until after the first of the year. Yeah, they're going to take some time to acclimate to their new surroundings and their new enclosure there in D.C. and will make their public debut January 24th. So it'll be a couple of months yet before they will be on public display. But that is cool. You remember the big dust-up some months ago when China demanded their pandas back and, there was this whole panda diplomacy breakdown, and now things seem to be smoothed over and everything is well with the world. The pandas are back at the National Zoo. Elsewhere, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember when Shohei Ohtani a few weeks ago became the first player to join the inaugural member of the 50-50 club in Major League Baseball. First player in history to hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases in a single season, which still is just boggles my mind that there has never, ever been a player to do that. But Shohei Ohtani was the first, and he hit the 50th home run in Miami. The ball that he knocked out of the park apparently has become the subject of a lawsuit. There is a legal battle over who owns the baseball, because apparently one fan caught it or thought he caught it and somebody wrestled it away from him. You remember the story, right? Through it all, The Dodgers reportedly offered $300,000 to buy the ball back for Shohei Ohtani, but the individual who was in possession of it at that moment declined the Dodgers' offer and is selling it online. The auction is underway, bidding is underway, and is now up to $1.7 million. That's the follow-up. I wanted to mention that. You remember the story we were talking about, this legal battle. Two people have filed lawsuits claiming that the ball is legally theirs, and this is why there is such a fight over it, because the bidding for the ball, the auction, is going on. $1.7 million is the latest bid at last check. So now you know why there's such a battle over the ball, Shohei Ohtani's 50-50 ball. You know how every day, it seems like every day, there is some story about the end of civilization, the, you know, disaster story, something we should be worried about. A doom and gloom story in the news, because every day they have to give you something to worry about. Well, here is today's doom and gloom story. Scientists are trying to save a popular fruit from becoming completely extinct. According to Popular Science, their website, popularscience.com, bananas are facing the threat of global extinction due to a pair of diseases, plant diseases. I don't know what the diseases are, but apparently there are two that are affecting bananas and threatening to make them extinct. But bananas, as you know, are big business. So Chiquita is trying to do something about this by crossbreeding what they hope will be a disease-resistant banana, although they say that this new banana might taste different than what consumers are used to. Do we even want bananas if they don't taste the same? I mean, what's the point? What's the point of saving bananas if they're not going to taste the same? Actually, this is not the first time a new gen banana would hit the marketplace. New generation banana. Back during the 1950s, and I did not know this, but you learn something new every day. Back during the 1950s, a pathogen wiped out commercial banana crops, and they created a replacement. And the one that they developed then is the fruit that we enjoy today. And now it looks like they've got to create an all-new banana. Save it from extinction. That is today's doom and gloom story there. The banana is going extinct. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. NASA announced yesterday, or unveiled yesterday, the new space suit that the astronauts will wear when they return to the moon. And apparently it is not only the devil who is wearing Prada. Yes, that's right. So will the astronauts. Prada. Made the new space suit that was unveiled yesterday. And in case you're envisioning some high-tech runway glamour in outer space, no, not really. It's pretty much like the bulky white suit that we've come to expect, although it does have some red accents and gray patches on the knees and the elbows. So why did they bother going with Prada, you know, using a designer line? Well, news release from NASA praises the luxury brand's expertise on high-performance materials, features, and sewing techniques. And they say it will also stand up to extreme heat and protect the astronauts from lunar dust. So apparently the extra expense of going with a designer label was worth it. The Artemis 3 mission planned for sometime in 2026. It will be the first moon mission with live astronauts since Apollo 17 back in 1972. And you can imagine that Prada will probably seize on the opportunity to create consumer fashion inspired by the by these spacesuits that they have. It's kind of like Tang. You remember when Tang became huge because, you know, the astronauts were drinking it. So all of a sudden, when we were kids, everybody had to have Tang because it was the drink of the astronauts. They'd do the same thing with the Prada spacesuits, I'm sure. A similar thing. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, something to think about, something to chew on here. How do you react? And we've all been in this situation. If you're in a relationship, and let's say a committed relationship with a spouse, significant other, whatever, might have a serious boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. If you're in a serious relationship, you probably had this happen when someone flirts with your significant other. Okay? A new study has found that instead of jealousy, people may feel a decrease in physical desire for their partner when someone else flirts with them. The generally accepted theory is that people find their partners more appealing if they appear more desirable to others. But apparently, according to this new research, that is true, but only up until the point where the relationship is well established. So if you're newly dating someone and somebody else flirts with them, it does make them more attractive to you, knowing that other people find them attractive as well. It kind of validates your feelings. But once you have established the relationship, it has the opposite effect. Professor Gerrit Birnbaum says of the study, while some people might attempt to make their partner jealous by attracting attention from others, hoping to feel more desirable or secure, research indicates that this tactic can backfire. For their study, they asked participants to imagine someone flirting with their partner, to remember someone flirting with their partner, or observe their partner being flirted with. And then they asked their reactions. And those in various stages of relationships reported their findings. Once the relationship is established, it doesn't make them more attractive to you. It can actually have the opposite effect. Interesting stuff there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly sunny today with a high pushing 60. Mostly clear tonight, low in the mid-30s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is investigating an injury crash involving a trooper that happened on U.S. 23 in Upper Sandusky in Wyandotte County. The Highway Patrol says a northbound van operated by a 38-year-old struck the back end of a marked Ohio State Highway Patrol Chevy Tahoe operated by a trooper from the Toledo Post. The trooper was slowing in traffic at the time of the crash. The trooper sustained minor injuries and was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital, while the driver who crashed into him was flown by medical helicopter to a hospital in Toledo with serious injuries. The Highway Patrol says that crash remains under investigation. The Ohio Supreme Court upheld the Ohio Secretary of State's directive that Ohioans can return their own ballots via Dropbox, but not those of their family or those in their care.
This comes despite a federal court ruling that Ohio law violates the rights of the disabled and their caregivers. A lawsuit was filed against the LaRose mandate, but the Ohio Supreme Court said the time had passed to make any alterations to voting processes. Critics of the decision say this is another example of legal voter suppression.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting, early voting is underway. Election day is November 5th. The Work Advance Job Training Program in Hancock County recently celebrated its one-year anniversary with a graduation celebration for its most recent graduates. Raise the Bar Executive Director, Tricia Valesque.
We are really excited to partner with great manufacturers in our community on this opportunity. The partnering employers have made a commitment to the program and our graduates to continue investing in them and looking for ways to grow them within the company and the culture.
Tricia says the program boosts the skills of entry-level applicants and individuals and populations that have been underrepresented in the manufacturing sector. And since the program started last year, 34 graduates have secured employment with area employers. Learn more about the Work Advance Job Training Program in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, there are many factors that play into the decision by a company to extend a job offer and the decision of a prospective employee to accept a job offer. But in the end, salary is almost always at or very near the top of the list. The just-released 2025 Robert Half Salary Guide provides insights on the latest hiring and compensation trends impacting today's workforce. And joining us with some of the highlights and insights is Robert Half's Alexandria von Tiergarten. And Alexandria, talk about some of the most significant findings when you look at the salary guide. What jumped out at you here?
Salary and compensation packages are always top priorities. But we're seeing three other emerging trends that I'm excited to talk about today. First, for job seekers, if you're willing to go into the office at least 4 days, more than half of managers say they're willing to pay you up to 20% more. Second, for hiring managers, more than half in our surveys say AI has changed their workforce, and many are hiring contract workers to fill this skills gap. And third, many retirees are being welcomed back into the workforce because of their value and skill set.
It's interesting you bring those three things up, because as I was looking at a rundown of some of the highlights, those are the same three that immediately jumped out at me. So let's talk a little bit about these kind of one by one. Those in-office premiums, this has been a trend this year. Employers wanting to get their employees back in the office, employees resisting. So I guess that's really what's led to this idea of paying people more if they're willing to actually come into the office?
Yes. For some employers, the answer is yes. And this trend is going to continue as companies are focusing on maximizing productivity and team dynamics. And two-thirds of employers are offering higher pay to new hires for in-office work. However, we also find that employees still want flexibility, and employers must be open-minded in order to attract and retain the very best workers in the market.
That is really interesting that it is not just an outlier. This is like two-thirds of employers, or nearly two-thirds, say that they are willing to pay those in-office premiums. You mentioned artificial intelligence. It does seem like this is this brave new world. We haven't really fully harnessed it yet. Not everyone is sure exactly where it's going to go. Is that why one of the trends is to bring in contract workers rather than hiring people technically on staff for that?
Well, you can hire on staff. It's getting enough people that have the skills, right? So we're finding a lot of our companies are looking to contract workers who have gotten the tech certifications and who have learned how AI is affecting, you know, what they're doing in their industry and for their role.
Yeah, really interesting. So I guess the message there for employees or prospective employees, these are really good skills to have. It's going to open up an awful lot of possibilities for employment, maybe sometimes even more so on your terms.
That can be. You know, we're recommending to workers in terms of their negotiating. We like to use the acronym ACE. A, assess your current situation, what you want, what your goals are. You know, prepare for the interview by using our salary guide at roberthalf.com. C, consider in-office opportunities, which will give you for collaboration and mentorship. And then finally, E, explore upskilling opportunities like AI and getting those certifications I talked about.
The other highlight that you mentioned, and again, I think this is something that we've really seen over the past several years, and it continues, the fact that we're seeing older workers step away from the workforce, but taking with them some critical skills that employers are finding it difficult to fill with the next generation. And so some of these highly skilled retirees being hired back. It really speaks to looking to upskill where you can if you are a prospective employee.
Absolutely. And if they're coming back as a contract employee, that's flexible work for them and maybe a better lifestyle. It's not quite retirement, but, you know, but not quite. full-time work.
And again, sort of doing it all on your terms. You were talking about some of the advice that you can offer for workers in terms to maximize their value for prospective employers. What can employers do to recruit the most highly sought after workers? Because the other thing that I take away from this is that those who have those critical skills and can market themselves with those skills are going to be very much in demand. So the competition is going to be pretty tight. How do workers or how do employers recruit those workers to their organization?
So employers must do three things. First, salary is always top of mind, but so are perks and benefits in a well-rounded compensation package. And second, they must act quickly. Delays are costly and they can lose a great candidate that they really want, as well as keeping their current staff feeling overworked. I had a client recently who shortened their interview process from 6 weeks to 2 weeks. They ended up with two great candidates to interview and now they're very happy. And finally, you know, consider bringing in contract workers when you have a hole in your organization to keep your projects on schedule and keep your workforce happy.
Is that a trend that will be long term, or is that more looked at as sort of a stopgap measure? We're going to hire these contract workers until we can bring somebody on full time on staff that will fill that role.
I think it's case dependent. So depending upon what the client needs,
okay.
Sometimes they have a large project that come in and it's shorter term and mm-hmm. the contractor is great for them.
Interesting stuff. Again, this is all from the 2025 Robert Half Salary Guide. And you have more on this on your website, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. Visit roberthalf.com where you can find our salary guide, get help with hiring, or even if you want to find work yourself.
Alexandra von Tiergarten, again with Robert Half with us this morning. Alexandra, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So we are now less than 3 weeks before the November election. And of course, all of the attention has been, understandably, on the presidential election, the Ohio Senate race, to a lesser extent, Issue 1. But a little further down the ballot, there is Issue 10. That is the Hancock County Job and Family Services Levy. And Randall Gabbarth is with us from the Hancock County ODJFS. And so this is... It seems like there was just we just had a children's services levy on the ballot, and here comes another one. What's the deal here?
It does seem like that, but it was March of 2020 when the first children's services levy was on the ballot. It passed, and it was a 5-year levy. So that levy expires at the end of 2025, and what we have on the ballot is the replacement levy.
Yeah, there are different terminologies for different ways that levies are structured. There, you know, this is not a new levy. It's not a. I mean, there are continuing levies. This is a replacement levy. Terminology aside, what that means is, should this be approved, property owners' taxes would go up slightly on this.
Slightly, right? Yes. So we are asking for the same millage we had mm-hmm. in 2020, however, on the current value of the property. So according to the auditor's office, it would go from $23 per $100,000 valuation to $28 per $100,000 valuation. So a slight increase. From $1.7 million to $2.1 million per year.
Mm-hmm. So what does this go for? I mean, why is this money needed?
This levy is almost entirely for placement of kids in foster care. When we first asked for the levy back in 2020, we had well over 100 kids in care. Mm-hmm. And that was really the worry at the time. And
yeah.
we worked really hard, and we went from over 100 kids in care to last month we had 74, which is about where it should be for a county of our size.
I see.
And we're still working on that. But what surprised us was the contracts we had to sign for placements in 2023. Those contracts from providers increased our placement costs more than $1 million.
Hmm.
So we had driven the costs down and by a number of kids that were in placement, and now those costs are going up due to providers charging us lots more.
Interesting juxtaposition there, because as you were starting to describe, you know, the first thought that enters my mind, if you've got less kids that we're placing, why is the need greater?
When we look at the children, which ones are costing us the money? It's the children that with the highest needs that are going to a residential care facility, and mm-hmm. what we're finding is that those placement costs, I was outraged at $400 per day back in 2020. Mm-hmm. We recently had a child that was $1,200 per day.
Per day.
And so these are kids that have profound needs, and they're a small portion of the children we have. And I went to the commissioners in December and said, hey, look, I'm seeing this trend. We had, at that point in time, about 80 kids in care, between 80 and 90. 15 were in residential centers. Those 15 kids were costing us 2/3 of our placement costs.
And there are no other alternatives?
It's very hard to find them. There are 1,800 kids in the state of Ohio that need that kind of residential placement. Mm-hmm. There are 300 facilities, and they don't hold very many kids. So what ends up happening is the counties are competing for those slots. And those centers are often specialized. Maybe one specializes in childhood substance abuse, maybe one in a mental health setting, maybe one with extreme behaviors. So they're not interchangeable.
So what is the alternative? I mean, again, if the costs continue to go up, I mean, you have a limited amount of funding. Right. How do you handle that?
What we're trying to do is work at the very front end with juvenile court, with schools, with the hospital, mm-hmm. to catch those families that are having trouble before they ever get to us. That's the only way we'll ever truly drive those costs down, I think. The Directors Association is also working with Ohio Department of Children and Youth to figure out why the placement costs have gone through the roof and try to work with those providers. And I also think we need to encourage those kinds of providers to open. There are very few in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at, because it seems like you're sort of at the mercy of the providers that are out there. Is there anything that can really be done to keep those costs in check?
In the short term, I would say no, beyond making sure, which we do, that the children are placed appropriately. So we're not just placing a child where there's a spot, mm-hmm. we're actually placing a child where they need to be. So the more we can drive those kids towards family foster care, which is more in line with $50 to $100 a day, as opposed to $600, $700, $800 a day.
Or more. It seems like it's good news that is tempered with a bad news. How frustrating is that? That as you lower the numbers of kids in your care that need the placement, that the costs continue to go up.
Oh, it is extremely frustrating. Yeah. And the commissioners and I have been talking about that a lot. What we're asking for in this levy would be 2 months increase. So that $400,000 increase in this levy actually represents 2 months of local costs. So we knew we needed some more, but we also knew that, as you pointed out, it's just going to continue to increase. So we need to work on our end to decrease the number of kids.
Now, a couple of questions with respect to that. This is a renewal of the same millage, and again, it will generate more income or more funding for the agency, but will that be enough, or, you know, what's to say that, you know, a year from now or a couple of years from now, we're not going to see another request?
Well, this is a kind of a wild place to play in with speculation, because if you'd asked me in 2020 when the levy passed, I was concerned about the number of kids, mm-hmm. and we got that under control, and for several years we were well within our budget. It's 2023 is really when we started seeing this increase, so it's kind of speculative right now, but like I said, the core problem is the number of kids in care. If we can drive that down, I think we'll stay within our budget.
And maybe working on alternative solutions. So this kind of buys you time to do that, essentially.
This
is the only source of funding to provide these services?
There are three sources of funding. There's the levy. There is a state share, state child protective allocation. And there is a federal share. The federal share has been at about $1 million since years and years here in Hancock County. The problem is that in 2017, there was a bill passed in Congress that limited the amount of federal participation that's going to be out there. So that $1 million continues to be a smaller and smaller amount of our overall. So the feds are sort of pulling back from the child welfare world. Governor DeWine did double the state child protective allocation in 2019. Or 2020, that was very helpful. Mm-hmm. But you know, that has not kept up with inflation. The levy is the majority of the money.
So it's kind of interesting in political speak, as that, like you mentioned, with the federal funding remains steady, but the value of that funding is less and less.
Exactly. And I'm sure that there's also some idea that our payroll costs play into this. The levy doesn't pay for payroll costs, and our payroll's been steady between $800,000 and $900,000 for a long time. So I'm in one of the strange places in this particular unit where our payroll costs are not our greatest cost. Placement costs by far are our greatest cost.
And this levy would go directly to that. So let me play devil's advocate here. Should this not be approved on this go around, what's the plan then? I mean, what would happen next?
Well, I'm going to guess that the commissioners and I are going to get together and figure out how to put it back on the ballot. What it essentially does is mess greatly with the county commissioners' ability to fund much of anything else. Mm-hmm. They don't. This would come out of their GRF fund. And that means that something else isn't going to get funded, something probably important, but, you know, that decision would have to be made.
Yeah. So, again, emphasizing the importance of this, if it were allowed to basically expire.
Yes.
The end of the five years. So, again, this is issue 10, which that's another thing. And I know that there's not much control that you have over that, but how concerned are you that this kind of get lost in the shuffle? I mean, there are an awful lot of issues that are actually on the ballot.
Yeah, I believe there's 12. And yes, I am concerned about that, which is why I'm here today. And I'm trying to reach out to any place I can to talk about it, to raise awareness that this is out there. It's on the ballot. And I know there's been a lot of early voting. And once again, it's just get the information out there that this is there. It's a replacement. It's not an additional levy. There's no trickery here. This is what we need to help kids.
Yeah. That's the bottom line. Again, issue 10, the Hancock County Job and Family Services levy. Randall Galbraith with us this morning, making the case. And if you want more information, we've got it linked up at our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net. Randall, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far for the broken news. This out of suburban Cleveland, and this story is really going viral. I don't know if you've seen the video on this, but it is absolutely hilarious. A police officer in Bay Village, Cuyahoga County, so it's suburban Cleveland, a police officer found himself being eaten by an inflatable pumpkin that had somehow broken away from its moorings in someone's front yard and rolled into the road. It escaped from someone's front lawn, ended up in the street near Wolf and Sadler Road in Bay Village, and dash cam footage shows the officer trying to clear the pumpkin out of the street when it completely engulfs him. And this was it. This is a huge lawn decoration. This is not a small pumpkin. This is like a huge inflatable pumpkin. It actually covered the entire road. It was so big. And so he's trying to corral this pumpkin, and it just kind of eats him up. Luckily, according to a statement from the Bay Village Police Department, no officers or pumpkins were harmed during this incident. They actually had to call for backup to get this giant pumpkin back to where it belonged. The pumpkin was returned to its homeowner, and all is well with the world. But if you have not seen the dash cam video of this, you got to look it up. It is absolutely hilarious. Elsewhere, the broken news. Again, likewise, sometimes you don't have to go very far. Did you hear what happened at Cedar Point over the weekend? Apparently on Sunday night, six people, including two juveniles, ended up in a huge fight near the Gemini roller coaster. Happened Sunday night. About 15 people in all were involved. and six were actually charged with misdemeanor disorderly conduct. They are facing criminal charges for this argument. And what started it all was when someone bumped into someone else's stroller. Someone bumped into a stroller and it ended up with a fight involving 15 people, six of whom, including two juveniles, actually facing criminal charges now. The whole thing. Bumped into a stroller. Are you kidding me? Man. What are we coming to in this society? I don't know. You just say, excuse me, and move on. Apparently that didn't happen. Other items from the broken news a little further away. In Warden, Washington, Washington State, a woman has been arrested for allegedly stealing a car with a baby inside, but that was only the beginning. Grant County deputies responded to a report of a stolen vehicle with a baby inside on Wednesday. They located the car, stopped the driver, arrested the suspect, put her in the patrol car. The baby, fortunately, was not hurt. But authorities say then the suspect somehow got into the front seat of the patrol car and took off again. Carjacked a cop car. That doesn't strike me as such a smart thing to do. Deputies then located the stolen patrol car, stopped the driver, and placed her under arrest for a second time. The story goes on to say investigators believe she was under the influence at the time. You think? Because I don't think that would be something that anyone would do sober. Fortunately, the baby was unhurt. Everybody is fine. Patrol car was undamaged. She's now safely behind bars. Crazy. A doctor in California is suing a local restaurant claiming that they served her a meal so spicy it burned her internally. Internally. Harjaslin Walia, I think is how you pronounce the woman's name. Ms. Walia, or Dr. Louia, I guess, ordered the spicy Dragon Balls appetizer at the Coup d'Etat restaurant in Los Gatos. And according to the lawsuit, the meal, which is advertised as spicy, so she asked them if they could make it with a little less heat since she doesn't tolerate spicy foods well. When she ate the dish, though, Dr. Walia says she felt her entire mouth, the roof of her mouth, her tongue, her throat, and her nose burn like fire. She says she began coughing, her eyes and nose watering, and it just became a horrible scene. She is seeking medical expenses, lost income, and damages. The case will go before a jury here in the not-too-distant future, but I don't know. Here's just a tip that I would maybe suggest to the good doctor. If you know that you don't tolerate spicy foods well, maybe don't order the spicy Dragon Balls. I can understand. I'm not a big spicy food person myself. And I think if I saw on the menu an item that said spicy Dragon Balls, I would just move on. I think I would just move on. But no, I guess she thought she would take a chance and just ask, can you make it less spicy? Well, here's the thing. How do you know they didn't make it less spicy? Can you imagine if it had been full power, what that would have entailed? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, maybe next time skip the spicy Dragon Balls. Let's see. Seems every Halloween we have one of these stories involving a driver trying to dodge the minimum passenger requirement needed to use the carpool lane in the highway in a major city. And this from California, because it seems like it happens at Halloween, because this is when people have, you know, all of their Halloween decorations and their, you know, scarecrows and skeletons. In this case, it was California motorist who was driving, caught driving in the carpool lane with a plastic skeleton wearing a mask. It was like a Scream mask, you know, one of those from the Scream movies, on a plastic skeleton. The highway patrol was not fooled. Yeah. Every Halloween, we have at least one of those stories. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is actually a really sweet story. This is a fabulous story. I love items like this. Jack Lorre enlisted the help of like nearly four dozen fellow travelers to pop the question at George Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston earlier this month. Here's the deal. Mr. Lorre had the other passengers on his flight hand his then-girlfriend Erica a rose as they exited the plane. So all of the passengers there leaving the plane hand her a rose. And then Mr. Lorre gave her the last rose before dropping down on one knee and asking for her hand in marriage. Isn't that sweet? That is really sweet. Nearly, it was like 40 other passengers on the plane each got a rose that they handed to her, and then he gives her the last rose as they're getting off the airplane there at the Houston airport. He coordinated this whole thing with the airline. He said, "I sent an email on a whim to United, and to have gotten their help to make this proposal happen is really cool." Apparently, Jack and Erica, she said yes, by the way. Yes, she said yes. They are now in the process of planning their nuptials. But cool for the airline. Kudos to the airline. Kudos to all of the passengers. That's all kinds of awesome right there. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Join WFIN for live coverage of the 2024 Cops and Kids Finley Halloween Parade, presented by Lone Depot. Our broadcast begins Tuesday night at 7.
Parade coverage on WFIN, presented by Visit Findlay and brought to you in part by Wolfie's, Fort Findlay FOP Lodge, Logan's Irish Pub, and T.R. Williams Insurance.
The Halloween Parade is live on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is kind of interesting. Every election cycle you hear, although I haven't heard so much of it this time around as what we have in the past, but every election cycle you hear those people say, if such and such person wins, if my candidate doesn't win the election, I'm moving to another country. You know, I'm going to leave. I just I can't be here anymore. Right. And it doesn't matter. Both sides, people on both sides of the political aisle have made these claims. But how many would actually, when push comes to shove, how many would actually consider leaving the United States based on politics? A new survey of 1,000 Americans finds that 20% would seriously consider leaving the U.S., depending on the outcome of the election. Democrats are 86% more likely to consider leaving than are Republicans. 85% of Americans overall say that they have negative feelings about the current political climate, which is not a surprise. But really, very, very few, even though lots of people may say it, very, very few would actually consider leaving. And where would they think about going? The top destinations for Americans moving out of the United States, according to this survey, Canada, the UK, and Mexico. Mexico? Really? You think the political climate in Mexico is any better than it is, in this country? I don't know. Well, the new series of main stage shows at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts is about to begin. Still time, though, to get your seats for for single events or for the entire season. Heather Clough is with us in the studio this morning. And actually, you've got a show tonight.
We do. We have Leslie Mendelson last night. She's great. She's at our Live at Arms series. Mm-hmm. She reminds me of Carole King.
She's got
a real 70s singer-songwriter vibe.
Right.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
We've talked about it before. For those who aren't familiar, Live at Arms is kind of laid back, very intimate.
It is. It's like a folk club.
And so perfect for that kind of,
exactly.
experience. So, yeah. And folks can still get tickets for that?
Yep, we still have some tickets for that at mcpa.org.
Okay, so check that out this evening. When is that?
That's tonight at 7:30.
7:30, okay. Yes. Hadestown is the big show, and this is a Tony Award-winning show.
It is.
This is a huge thing. Tickets have been going well, but there are still seats available for next week's show.
We have about 80 tickets left. Okay. And it's Monday at 7:30.
Okay.
And it's our first show of the main stage season. So if you're thinking about, I want to buy the whole season and get a little discount, mm-hmm. Now's the time to do it before Monday.
Yeah.
The way our ticketing system is set up, you actually won't be able to do it online because you won't be able to get the same seats for every show. But okay. If you call our box office, we can help you out with that.
Okay, very good. And so get those tickets. For Hadestown, and the entire series is just terrific this year. Mention again for those who might be thinking about this.
Yeah, so we have 6 shows this season. They include Hadestown, and then we end the season with another Broadway show, Come From Away.
Terrific shows.
Yeah. I'm excited about both of them. In between, we have Molly Tuttle, who is an amazing bluegrass artist. If you're not familiar, I kind of compare her to Alison Krauss talent level wise.
Okay.
And this is a similar feel as well.
Okay.
Real young, great artist.
Up and comer,
absolutely. And then we have Michael Kavanaugh's Merry Rockin' Christmas at mm-hmm. Christmas time. Everybody loves him. He's
yeah.
Ohio guy.
Right. And he was on Broadway. He was in the Billy Joel
yes.
Moving out.
Yeah. Yep. He was handpicked by Billy Joel to play that role.
Yeah. So he's got some talent.
Exactly. Yeah. Mandy Patinkin is in February. That's a great Valentine's show. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people know him from his acting. So he
yes.
was in Princess Bride. He was Inigo Montoya.
Right.
He was on NCIS and shows Homeland.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a Tony Award winning singer, actor, a beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in February. And then in January, we have Jody Messina, which is very, very close to selling out.
Yeah.
Finley loves their 90s country women.
And so, again, if you're thinking of getting season tickets, both for Hadestown coming up and Jody Messina almost sold out, now would be the time to
yes,
do that if you haven't done it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we just have a handful of tickets left for her.
Yeah. In addition to that, let's don't forget the family series.
Right. Yep, we have 4 family shows. They start in November with Circus Pop, which is a bubble circus show, which would be fun. And then we have, the weekend after Thanksgiving, we have Lightwire Very Electric Christmas. So
okay.
That'll be a fun one. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple of more in the spring, too. So we have 4 family shows this
year. Yeah, great opportunity to get the entire family, and especially get the kids, introduce them to live performances and a lot of the light and the
yeah.
sound and the bubbles, all of that.
Yep. And we have pre-show activities in the atrium, so you can come
it's
in
terrific.
And do a little craft and then go into the show.
Yeah.
And those shows are tailored to families, so they're usually 60, 90 minutes. It's
yeah.
not, kids aren't going to sit
yeah.
there for 4 hours.
terrific shows for that. And then a lot of rental shows this
we
year.
We do, yeah.
Have a tremendous number of rental shows, which is great news.
It is great. Pretty much any tribute show you see coming through, that's a rental. So that means mm-hmm. somebody rents our venue.
Mm-hmm.
They have all the expenses. They pay us to use the place. We
right.
get great shows. There's no risk to MCPA financially.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hair band one coming
right,
up.
That's coming
We've got
up.
A lot of fun ones.
Swan Lake. I know my wife was really excited about Swan Lake and Celtic Christmas.
Yes, those are all
shows.
Rentals.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that one's going to be terrific, too.
Yep.
So
we have another one, too. Oh, Christmas Tea, a British Christmas one.
Oh, yes. Yes,
yep.
I did see that. So if you're thinking of celebrating the holidays, this will get you into the holiday spirit.
Exactly.
You've got a lot of stuff to get people into the holiday spirit. And again, tickets for all of those on sale now. Also, and this is always a big show, always a sellout, Dueling Pianos is back.
Yes. So we do that two weekends every year, November and February. The November one is the 8th and 9th, and we have like three single tickets left for those two nights. So people love Dueling Pianos. It doesn't take place at MCPA. We do it at the back room in Alexandria's. Mm-hmm. And if you've never experienced Dueling Pianos, you should definitely do it at least once in your life.
Okay. So there you go. That's a fundraising event.
It is. Yeah, that's pretty much the only strict fundraiser we do. Mm-hmm. Tickets to sale will go on sale to the February one soon. So if you did miss out on November, but it's a lot of fun.
When they go on sale, get them quickly. Yes. Because they go fast.
They do. And it's a smaller space. We can't seat 900 like we do at the theater.
Exactly. But that's part of the attraction of it. So more information on all of those shows on the website. And again, you can buy single event tickets or you can get the entire series. But for the series, you'll want to call. Right?
Yeah, you want to call the box office and ask them because like I said, you won't be able to pick one seat and get it for all the shows. Mm-hmm. Because
do you have to do them. if you get the whole season series, especially at this point, because a lot of them, like Jody Messina, is almost sold out.
Right.
Do you have to have the same seats for every show?
No, okay. No. So if you like in the beginning of the season when there's a lot of availability and we're only selling season tickets, that's what happens. You go on and you pick. I want G101 and 102. Yeah. You get those seats for the entire thing, and people love that because they know where they're seated and things like that. But when it gets a little closer. You sort of just pick and choose.
Yeah,
move around.
Switch around. Which it's kind of interesting you mentioned that because I kind of like the idea of sitting different spots in different shows.
Absolutely.
But in any event, we've got a link on our webpage to more information. All of those shows, first one of the main stage series, Hadestown, is coming up on Monday. Again, Heather Clough with us from the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Heather, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, hard to believe, we're in week number 9 already of the high school football season. We'll get a preview of the Trojans showdown with Whitmer. Also, another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen and lots more to finish up the week. Until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.